spaces and places for making artwork, and this is obviously important. And I hope that by bringing in the question and this relationship of the donor, user, archivist and artist, by bringing them together, I hope I have demonstrated how we might continue to think about feminist ethics that we might find located in the archive. Thanks very much.
We have two more speakers. We are going to run slightly over time, but
please stay with us.
Please stay with us, as lots of people do. Next up, we have Caroline Galsden. Caroline is a PhD student at Gray's School of Art, writing on feminist manifestos and social practice. She has a background in community education and research into contemporary art practice. Caroline has a distinction from Glasgow School of Art for research on the social justice and participation programme at Glasgow Museums at GOMA, and previously worked as a researcher on the Materials for Alternative Histories archival project at GSA and CCA.
Thanks for staying on. I know it's really hot in here, and I'm going to do what Nikki did and go from audio to slides. And so I've been sort of watching, and hopefully I won't mess it up. I can even get my. I'm just going to read because I get nervous. So if I'm not loud enough, or you need me to slow down or something, just shout. This is my research title, and I'm just going to give you a little brief context of that before I go on to talk about a particular archive in relation to Castle Milk. So I'm looking at social art practice and looking at it through this particular lens of the Feminist Manifesto and a number of second wave feminist manifestos. And I'm doing this to try and trace a history of feminist ethics, influences and praxis that too often become the unseen pasts and parts that have made numerous contemporary social practices possible. Oops. Sorry.
You just use the back button.
I'm going to start off with a quote from artist Monica Ross that she made in a kind of stream of consciousness memory poem, and that's just an extract from a much longer piece there that she wrote on this subject. Because I'm interested in the we who are not of art history and art world memory, and thinking about how to bear witness to these complex past histories. So in doing this research, the imperative is not to try and fix history, but to use a metaphor from Kate's practice to redraw it with care and be in conversation with it, so that a discursive space is opened up for the future. So you've seen this image before now, and I'm glad, because that one's a wonky one that I took in the archive. Sorry about that. So hopefully this brief description of my research makes it clear already to see why the Castle Milk Woman House Archive is really important. I've got a few points as to why. So firstly, for its challenge to the 90s City of Culture narrative by insisting on the representation of women in art. And secondly, for its introduction of feminist models of practice to the cultural and social landscape of Glasgow, and also the art school at the time, and to its assertion of that creativity and art flourish in dialogue through supportive and confidence-building networks, and finally for its reappropriation of the home as a space not of private confinement, but of social creativity. So what I'm going to do is try and consider this archive in relation to another archive that I've also been working within, which is the Women's Audio Archive, initiated by artist Marisha Lewandowska. So I'm going to try and, through this comparison, try and come to some general but by no means definitive thoughts on feminist archival ethics. So this one you're familiar with, because Nikki just spoke about it. So before I speak directly about the Women's Audio Archive, I want to speak briefly about a conception of an archive as something that's living and precarious. So I think this conception is important to feminist ethics because it's a way to reimagine the archival as an unfinished space that can be open to conversations with the present moment and consequently open to reimagining that moment. So I read this piece recently that Nikki's spoken about, and this transcription, which is a summary of a conversation between herself and Hannah Little at the Women's Library. So what Nikki has described is this kind of process of the artist listening to the dreams and dilemmas of an archivist, and she sees this as a balancing act between the practical and emotional that tries to anticipate the imaginations and the desires of future archive users. What this term, dreams and dilemmas of an archivist, made me think about was a diagram by another archivist, Victoria Worsley, which brilliantly describes this kind of precarious in-between space that a living archive occupies. I like the fact that it's actually on the fold of a book as well, the details of the in-between space. So Worsley sees this new model archive as a subjective territory encompassing feelings, emotions, and the irrational chaos of life. And in relation to Castle Milk, Women's Archive, it's important. An important question to me is how, through the traces of what is left, is it possible to express the effective labour that went into the work? So the invisible social and process-based contributions behind the silent slides and documents. So I wondered if thinking about this living archive would be useful in this instance. So in Nikki's transcription, some words stood out for me that I've run together in my imagination. Living subjects struggle for existence. So I'm interested in this element of uncertainty, which again relates to concerns over what is ephemeral and in danger of going missing from archives, and can relate to Lewandowska's audio archive. I'm also interested in this question of occupying an in-between position as part of a feminist archival ethics. In relation to Worsley's conception of a living archive that can be open to the future, to future users and continues to challenge the politics of memory, I think Lewandowska's archive proves an interesting comparative model. So what I'm going to focus on in her archive is the way she performs uncertainty through it. And she struggles with the questions that are laid out in this in-between space, so that the big questions of public and private, life and death, silence and voice, presence and absence. She also struggles with the idea of being displaced by language, and she navigates these questions through her archive to negotiate a creative praxis. So this is the Women's Audio Archive, or it's an online space, and it admits to being a selective commentary, and in fact the emphasis on the fact that it's selective, personal, subjective is important. And it covers a time period from 1983 to 1990. It contains many perspectives on feminism, art history, and social practice in many forms. It also reflects Lewandowska's semi-nomadic existence at the time. So she was traveling between, having left Poland, she was traveling between places in Canada and New York and London. And along with this movement, it also reflects her cultural upbringing in a totalitarian communist state, which she writes, gives a sensitivity to the power of representation, to the original and the manipulation of images, thereby influencing her perception of how history is constructed, who keeps the documents, and who has access to public broadcast. So Lewandowska describes history as something she carries around with her, and she's interested in how it speaks to the present moment, or doesn't speak. In relation to the politics of memory, she's acutely aware of the power that the archive holds. And in all this movement, there's a concern for the things that get lost, and a sense that the motivation for making the archive comes from a personal struggle to find a position in new cultural circumstances. So the archive is made up of a number of tape recordings, and these are a mixture of personal conversations with other artists and writers and organizers in her field and fields that intersect. And also unedited public talks. So there are many, but just to give you a couple of examples of relevance today, there's Judy Chicago speaking about the legacies of her practice in there, and there's also several tapes on Joe Spence, with Joe Spence speaking. So the public talks were originally recorded unofficially by Lev and Oscar sitting in the back of rooms, and the permission for their current public online status was negotiated 20 years later. So this negotiation project in itself is an art project, and this gap between the recordings and the decision to make them public is important. So in the recordings, Lev and Oscar speculates on what she might do with the unedited versions of the public talks, and at some point she says she might just reduce them to all the bits that are cut out of institutional narratives. So like the impulse behind Women in Profile and Castle at Woman House, there's a concern for the things that are not included in institutional narratives. So on the one hand, you have these public recordings, but they're all, the tapes also form a kind of personal narrative of Lewandowska's struggle to situate herself and to develop a practice. So in this way, the archive is necessitated by a strong survival instinct in Lewandowska, who speaks on the tapes of the struggle for theory and feminist theory to be useful in times of personal turmoil. So this concern for theoretical language to speak to the realities of her life is also a concern in the Women House project that aims to step between the kind of academic world of Glasgow School of Art at the time and its postmodern language and the different social reality of Castlemilk. So where the Castlemilk project resists the exclusive language of art speak, Lewandowska is also struggling differently with language. She describes poetically how, in order not to get lost in English, which has become so familiar to her that she doesn't need to translate, she does translate herself from Polish anyway, and she calls this she calls the result a crippled form, and she says that the crippled form is better because it bears relationship to her. So the Women's Audio Archive is built around the premise that there are missing texts, and through the kind of personal conversations that are, and these conversations really approach people in an uncertain way. They don't have a laid out agenda, but instead they're based on this kind of speculation where she asks people to imagine their own missing texts with her. So by considering what is missing or edited out, she's dealing with a kind of alternative personal and subjective space that can haunt the main spaces, in the way that Castlemilk Woman's House set up an alternative space of the home. And that was a kind of haunting of the mainstream narratives of the time. So the missing texts are described as gaps or cracks that are absent from the main story or misrepresented in a way that makes their survival in the future less secure. I've just got a little clip from the archive
that I will find. Positions that people explore and take, which are not a very desirable position within the dominant for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore there are excluded or shifted to the areas that are the missing text being this whole structure of positions and voices and commitments. There's a certain way of living, a certain way of being, a certain way of producing that is largely invisible, but that holds and props up domain text.
Okay. So I know it's a little difficult, but I didn't want to edit that in any way, and I like the way that you can hear the tape running over it, so I hope it came across. Just get through. So on the archive, this is the main visual that you'll get, apart from the tapes, which again sort of backs up this idea of the crack in the sound wave. So like a crippled language solution, the archive is not so much about filling in gaps than in articulating them. Lewandowska talks in a very embodied way of the cracks in monuments and canons and of living in these cracks, which is more precarious than being on the edge or the margins, and is concerned with the question of how to survive and to articulate the extent to which the invisibility of these cracks holds things up. So she's seeking a way to move in the cracks. And this reminds me of Greg Shillette's sentiment in his recent book, Dark Matter. So Shillette refers to a vast surplus archive from below, structured by narrative gaps and lacunas. To Shillette, the act of bringing the shadowy archive into visibility is not a matter of providing a better social context for the usual subjects. Instead, he insists that when the excluded are made visible, it's always a matter of politics and a rethinking of history. And that's also Carol Duncan inside, a quote from Carol Duncan inside the book, which I'll leave up. So in the audio archive, the question of personal survival and systemic survival are understood to be in relationship to each other, and the intervention is in asserting the personal and the subjective within the public realm, which she does through the negotiations later. So I guess this comes back to the personal is political, but also personal knowledge is formed through a willingness to be in the dark in a more precarious place and to learn with other people. So through listening, it becomes clear that it's this relational understanding in personal conversations that cross over between these public and private boundaries that will be at the heart of her creative praxis. So in this way, the form of the archive reveals a whole structure of precarious and poetic social negotiations that support creative individuals. So to come back from this particular piece of feminist history to think again about Castle Milk, I just want to end with some questions that I hope can relate to this kind of ethic of uncertainty. So can the form of the archive speak to the question of missing history so that the project's initial intentions do not, to use Lewandowska's phrase, go missing? So can it be an open space that will still allow for the multiple voices that made up the project? Finally, I'm interested in asking what the implications are of acknowledging feminist methodologies and making them visible through the archive now that we're again in the process of remembering cultural narratives through the Generation Project.